I was fully prepared for this to be a terrible week. It's the end of the second season. The show still isn't that good yet. And I only vaguely remembered what peak performance was about, but I actually really liked this episode. I was really surprised.
I liked it. You know, the first half was very, very touch and go for me. There were a lot of points where I'm like, all right, this could be interesting. This could be interesting. And then the rat dude is like, I have jowls, you know, and I knew that the Ferengi were coming because I knew because I'd seen the Netflix description. And yeah, I was ready for this episode to just tank towards the end. And once the actual mission starts, once they're doing this test, it got really good. And I liked this episode a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's funny because I think in the first, 15 or 20 minutes, it's really just kind of a hangout episode. Like, they're not really doing much. There's this strange game that they're playing.
Stratagema,
right? Which just appears to be, like, I don't know, some sort of, like, brick thing or something.
Yeah, it looks like a Pac-Man type thing.
You have, like, all 10 fingers you're, like, controlling this weird thing with. I don't know. And it seems really fast.
I know.
And I'm not sure how anybody could ever play it. But
meanwhile, PC games these days, you just hit F and there's a cutscene and that's it. So, I mean, they really didn't predict where video games would be going.
Stratagema is an indie game.
Oh, my God. Ken Levine Stratagema.
Yeah. I like all of that. Like, it's just kind of like, this is what's happening. We're going to do this. I
didn't like the character and I hated him. And that was a lot of the reason I didn't like it.
You're not supposed to like him.
I know, but that doesn't matter. But I was still watching a horrible character.
And that's why I kind of like it, because I agree that he's horrible, but I think he's interesting. And I think he's supposed to be horribly amusing, and I think they pull that off. And I think it's a good thing that the show is able to pull that off at this point, because it's not that he's painful to watch, it's just that he is horrible and everybody's kind of amused by him and they know that he's arrogant. And so you're waiting, you know, you're with the crew, and I think at this point in the show it's a good thing that that you're watching it and you feel like you're with the crew instead of against them, or just sort of like you're rooting for them in a way. And so when you get to the end of the episode, you're like, ha,
I mean,
did you really expect that to happen, dude? No, they just showed you up.
You know, I mean, I like that. I liked Pulaski in this because she has this little, there in this entire episode, like, she really just wants to show this guy up. Like, she just gets this bee in her bonnet and she's trying to, you know,
she doesn't like him.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think it's hilarious that, like I said, at this point, I kind of really like Pulaski. And I think it's funny that this is kind of her. She wants to take this guy down a peg, and she's going to do whatever she can to take him down. And that's funny, you know, because, you know, to a degree, we don't feel bad that he's taken down a peg, because he doesn't really lose much other than a little pride for this.
Well, that's the thing, though, I think, you know, because if you look at it in terms of, you know, the two characters that play this guy, I think, what was his name? Zach Dorn, I think.
Sure.
Maybe that was the race's name. I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, that was kind of ambiguous. But anyway.
So, you know, you look at Riker and he, like, I want to play him in Stratagema. I like Riker's easy admission that he's going to lose. He's just doing it because it's an honor to play him.
Yeah, it's the thing. It's like a golfer saying, well, I played with Tiger Woods once. Like, you're never going to win, but that's a story to tell at the bar, you know?
It makes Riker seem really level-headed and really good. And then it also, you know, is this nice counterpoint to his victory at the end of the episode.
And of course, there is the metaphor of you. How do you fight against somebody who you are hopelessly outgunned with? You know, Riker's is, you know, well, it doesn't really matter whether I win or not. You know, I had fun. You know, he's gotten to see, you know, Riker will learn. He's learned something for his next game of Stratagema. You know,
yeah, against absolutely. Anyone,
you know, Data, meanwhile, gets this existential crisis really about it. He worries about a flaw in himself and, you know,
Data almost develops some sort of like OCD in this episode, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, because Data's never really lost in this kind of a way before. I mean, we even have in the next episode, you know, he says to Picard, you know, if my hypothesis is right, you know, I could be wrong. And, you know, Picard says, you're pretty much wrong. You know, yeah, and even in juxtaposition to that first, you know, that's the scene that they have the clip of where he says, you know, I am superior to humans. You know, Data doesn't have this as an arrogance in himself, but he does know what his own capabilities are, and he knows on paper he should beat him at Stratagema.
You know,
he doesn't, and it is his, at that point, inability to understand why, you know, what's his name is winning, you know. And I like that, but they never really go into the question of whether is Data have his feelings hurt, or is, you know, like, both Troy and Pulaski seem to not necessarily agree on that question.
Well, Pulaski says he's sulking, which in a way he kind of is.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that, you know, Pulaski has gone from dismissing Data entirely to caring about him and kind of being his friend. And I think, she feels a little guilty that she pushed him to playing stratagema and sort of getting him a little obsessed with figuring out what exactly was wrong, even though nothing was wrong. I mean, and that I think is interesting, too, because I think in an earlier incarnation of this episode, from maybe if this was a first season episode, I think that, you know, the reveal would have been that the guy would have cheated or something.
Yeah.
And I just like the fact that it's like, no, sometimes you just lose.
He's a grandmaster for a reason.
Right.
I don't think in any of the episode it's even implied that he's a paper tiger about this at all. Yeah, he's arrogant, but he probably is the best stratagema player, one of the best stratagema players in the galaxy. You know, that's fine. He's a grandmaster. But what's
interesting about that is, I think, the implication there that he's a great strategist, he's a great tactician, but arrogance. His arrogance seems to be founded on skill. But at the end of the day, what is the downfall of him is that he anticipates that his opponents are going to be playing for the same goal that he is. And so what I like about that is it shows that, yes, you can be really, really good at what you do, but if someone changes the rules on you without you knowing, and it's not a cheat to change the rules necessarily, because
he's not even changing the rules. He's changing.
Well, what I mean by change the rules is just change the assumptions by by how the game is played. And you see that in Riker's plot as well, where he says to Wesley, when Wesley beams over to the Enterprise to get the plasma, that he's cheated. And then he's like, well, you know, okay. It's not necessarily cheating. It's that, you know, there's this fine line between cheating and just sort of like changing the way the game. Yeah, resourcefulness. And so the two plots are really well balanced in that way.
In a way, what Data does really is, I mean, early on in the episode, they're told no stratagema, you know, two grandmasters. If what's-his-name was playing against someone who was his exact equal, you know, it would go – they said, you know, they may go 10,000 moves or more. And
– which doesn't seem like it would take that long.
Well, I mean, we see Riker get to 23 and him to get to 100, you know. So when we see Data and him playing in the very last thing, they're on 30, 35,000 moves. And you see, what's his name again? What are we calling
Zach Dorn?
Zach Dorn. When we see Zach's on, like, sweating and Zach freaking
Morris
out. And
from Saved by the Bell.
Yes. Why didn't he just say, hold on a sec. What was this when he wanted to stop the...
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever he did.
Well, I mean, you see him sweating. You see him freaking out. And in a way, he's gone three times longer than he probably ever has played a game on this. Part of it is Data just doesn't get tired. So really, one of the resources that Data has is an infinite – he could stalemate this infinitely. He could go for as long as – you know, if he's just trying to play for a stalemate, he could go keep going. He could keep getting him in loops. He could keep tricking him. And eventually, he gives up. That's – and really this episode, you know, he asks Worf, you know, when you don't have – weapons, when you can't outmaneuver, when you don't have, you know, what do you have left? And he says, guile, you know.
Right.
And this episode is about figuring out what you do when you have nothing, how you still win. How do you trick someone? How do you gain an advantage when you have nothing, when you are cornered?
Right. And I think it's interesting, too, because if you look at the scene with Data and Picard in the observation lounge, where Data's giving sort of a rundown of Riker's possible command decisions and his tactics that he may use, for example, you know, or actually, no, I think it's Troy in that scene.
Yeah, Troy it is.
But, you know, it's funny because, you know, Data is saying, well, he might fake us out and change his tactics. He might do this. He might do that. And Troy says, well, no, he probably won't. I mean, the thing is that you know, people tend to be who they are, even if it's not going to work for them.
Yeah.
Right. And so Data, that seems to be sort of like the lesson that Data is learning here, is that he needs to be himself in order to figure out what exactly he can do to win this game.
You know, it's actually funny because I thought I found that scene. I mean, it's funny that you have him going through, well, he know, but he's going to know that we do that. So, but he's going to know that we know that he's going to do that. So he's going to do this, but he's going to, you know, and he's, in a way, this is a scene after he's been told, like, look, you need to just stop pussyfooting around and you need to actually work on this problem. And in a way, it feels like Data's worked on it a little too much, you know? And I think that, you know, he's kind of overcompensating for the fact that he did nothing for the rest of the episode. And I think Troy's reaction is a bit like, well, you know, Data, you've already figured this one out. Like, you're Data. You've got this answer.
Well, like, it's like you can over-prepare, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what – I think, you know, it's interesting that the show is going in the direction of Data's fault is that he over-prepares.
Yeah. And, I mean, as we know, at this point, even us as viewers know, because we've seen Riker's preparations, he has just made this, all right, I've figured out this trick. He hasn't gone to the, well, they're going to figure out that I've done the trick, and they're going to figure out that I figured – you know. Riker doesn't go that far.
Well, yeah, because Riker assumes that they're not going to know that, right?
Because, and that's Troy's point. Like, he needs to, you know, he needs to realize that we're not all computers. We are not all perfect machines. And in a way, again, that's kind of one of Data's advantages.
And of course, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, Riker does have some advantages over the Enterprise that they don't realize. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting that they don't bother to change the command codes, but okay, whatever. You know, and so there's kind of this implication there that, you know, with the warp drive, getting the warp drive online, and they can have this 2-second burst of warp one, you know, the whole thing about having the Romulan warbird show up, even though it's not actually a real Romulan ship. You know, they figure things out that they can do to give them some sort of advantage. And, you know, it's a nice counterpoint to, I think, the Stratagemus stuff, because it does set up Riker as someone who, not necessarily underprepares, but he definitely prepares, I think, in a different way than Data will. And, you know, if Riker's lesson in this episode is that it's possible to prepare and still lose, I think, you know, it's Data's lesson in this episode that it's possible to overprepare, and so you should just sort of sit back sometimes and say, okay, I'm not gonna think myself into a corner here.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you do need out of the box thinking. Again, I'm you know, there's a little more that could be read into the Stratagemus sequences that I can see, you know, I could see those being extended in a way that would have bogged down the episode. But yeah, he does have to learn out of the box thinking in order to beat him. You know, I mean, that's what one of the advantages humans have, is that they aren't rigidly programmed. And that is one of the things that whenever Data learns how to be more human, he's learning how to do something that's a little less logical than he used to be. And in this, again, to play against an opponent to win is the logical thing to do. It's the thing anybody would do. The way he wins is by doing something that's a little crazy. The way that they all do it. You know, again, in this episode and probably throughout the franchise and throughout, you know, TV in general, because, you know, let's face it, it makes it more dramatically interesting. Yeah, the way you win is by doing something that no one else would have thought of.
Yeah.
And, you know, what makes a, you know, I think it's, okay, so the Zaxxon says, you know, about Riker, and actually this is kind of a tie between these two episodes. He doesn't believe in Riker's prowess, he tells Picard, because he's not serious enough, really. And, you know, Riker is, you know, he likes to make jokes. He likes women. He likes having, you know, fun. He likes joking around. He likes having close friendships with the members of his crew. And yet, and, you know, again, to Zaxxon, to an outside observer, that looks like someone who's not going to really be that successful when things come down to it. But then, you know, and then Picard's thing is, well, that's how he leads. Riker's a much more, I think, intuitive leader than Picard is. Picard leads by kind of being so tough and so inspiring that everybody kind of wants to be him. When Picard is in the room, everyone thinks he's the coolest guy there, and they all want to be as competent as Picard. And they see he's able to do this, so why can't I?
I would take that a step further. I think they don't want to let Picard down.
Oh yeah. He's dad. I mean, he's their perfect dad. You know, he's the father figure. Riker's the cool older brother who's doing all of these things and making it look easy.
Well,
and
I think the difference here is that Picard, you don't want to let down. Riker, you want to impress.
Yeah,
and that's the difference.
And both of them make it clear that they've both of them are very intuitive. I mean, both of them do read people very well. I won't say Picard doesn't. And they figure out how to get the best people in the job and what they need to tell them or who they need to put on something. And that's really, you know, another of the sub-themes of this show is that great, you know, this is a team effort much more than the original series were. And part of what makes a good team is having trusting that the people who you've put into the into these positions are going to be able to do that job.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing. I mean, we don't see a whole lot about what Riker's doing in the preparations leading up to the battle because, you know, we can assume that he's doing some of the grunt work. But, we see Worf and the blonde ensign, who I loved, by the way. And I don't know if she's in the show again, but I kind of hope she is because she's just like, I don't know. I was just expecting her to be one of those random extras that's just standing there and doesn't say anything to save money. But she has a couple of lines. And I'm just like, who are you?
She doesn't have a major personality or anything like that. It's not, you know, she's not really, they don't go into her backstory or who she is as a person. But she's there. Like, she's definitely a presence in the scenes she's in.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know who this is. You know, there's that great scene where she's asking, well, where can she get the cables? And Worf is just like, well, anywhere, and pulls them down to the ceiling. You know, there's a lot of time spent with Geordi and Wesley in the engineering section of the Hathaway. I know. I didn't even pick up on that they were working very closely together in this episode.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of long nights. Getting punchy.
Getting punchy.
Ew.
I know.
And so we don't really see what Riker's doing necessarily, but I don't get the sense that he's slacking off, but I also think that, you know, we're supposed to take away from that the fact that he is inspiring them to do things in a different way. And
they are in a basically a derelict ship right now. And, you know, Riker's the one who's, even if Riker is going around to everybody and says, come on guys, you can do that. That's still an important job in this because, I mean, Wesley's the one who looks at it and is like, oh my God, we're fucked, you know? And, you know, Riker scolds him, but then is, you know, a little softer and basically say like, look, we can do this, you know? We got to figure this out. We can figure this out.
I think, you know, it's interesting because I think that Wesley shows himself to be adaptable in this episode in a way which I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he would have pulled a trick like that on the Enterprise. Like, I think if he had...
Because it would have pissed Picard off.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think he would have told Picard exactly what he was intending to do and letting Picard make the call. Whereas on the Hathaway, Wesley lets Riker's example lead him, and he... I mean, let's be clear. He snows Riker as well, and he snows everybody. I mean, there's that great little scene where he's sort of like...
Oh, this is ruined.
Yeah, you know... I have to beam it out into space. Oh, man. And then he goes back to the Hathaway, and Riker acts upset. But he's not really, you can tell.
Well,
he's impressed.
That's the thing. Picard would have found that to be cheating, and he would not have – he would have seen the, well, you told me to improvise, as the bullshit that it is. Riker, again, you want to impress Riker, and Riker is – number one – I mean, Picard is more fatherly in that he's worried about how to guide Wesley.
Yeah.
And he's worried. He wants Wesley to avoid some of the mistakes he's made. Again, the episode where the two of them are in the shuttle together, you know, Picard explicitly says, you know, I don't want you to learn that lesson the way I did. You know, you're not, I hope you don't learn humility by getting nearly killed, you know, and... But Riker's the cool older brother, again, who's saying, like, no, you can do this. Figure it out, Wesley. And instead of – with Picard, Wesley needs to show that he has a high level of competence. With Riker, Wesley needs to show that he's his own man.
Yeah.
And this is him doing that. This, you know, Wesley – and one of the things that I think that – this season is beginning to show about Wesley is that he actually can do both. In a way, he is almost going to grow to be a synthesis of Picard and Riker.
That could be. Yeah.
I think the two of them as having influence on him is a good match for creating a good starship captain.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I don't know where Wesley goes in this, and
well, you'll find out.
I'll find out.
Yeah. He actually ends up, I don't know. Let's say he's a Borg. He He gets assimilated. That's how.
What
happens to Wesley.
I picture he and Geordi as Borg in like a little Borg house together, and they have like a dog.
Yeah.
And they like collect like little like Borg figurines, you know, like everywhere, and it's like their thing.
You don't know much about the Borg, do you, Richard?
I don't know anything about the Borg.
Okay, you'll find out about the Borg. Speaking of villains, we have the return of the Ferengi in this episode, which I think is the first time they've been in the show all season. And they're quite muted.
Incidental to the episode,
Is a good way. Well, I mean...
Yeah, they don't really do anything.
I think it's...
I mean, they need to be...
They serve a purpose because I think they show that... You know, okay, you fight against each other, but then at the end of the day, when there's a real external threat, the thing to do is to put aside your differences, yeah. And you know that's a pretty basic lesson.
And it's not even, but I mean, it's
and
not,
it makes the yeah. end of the episode, I think, more exciting because, of course, yeah. then you suddenly have this issue where the Enterprise doesn't have any weapons. What are they going to do? The Hathaway has to do yeah. this thing. You know, okay, how are they going to get out of this? It ratchets the tension up in a way.
And mechanically what's going on is really fun.
Yeah.
Does it need to be the Ferengi? Could it have been any one of a dozen other species? I mean, I think at that point of the episode, it was genuinely too late to... Adding another random species would have been confusing it even more. Like, you don't want to...
Well, I think
because you've already, you know, that's just adding another element. We've already sort of established the relationship to the Ferengi, and so
I think it's a way and it's an opportunity for the show to retcon the Ferengi a little bit because they're shown in this episode to basically be interested in stuff, right? And that was something that went back even to their first appearance in The Last Outpost, where Data was calling them Yankee traitors.
Yeah.
But they were supposed to be actually threatening at that point. I don't get the sense that they're supposed to be threatening in this episode. I think the threat comes from their poor timing, right?
Yeah, if they had gone when the Enterprise had its... If that ship came upon the Enterprise at any other time... They would have just said, like, look, we have 5 billion guns and they're all trained out. You just leave, dude. Just leave. But at this point, the Enterprise is just happens to be crippled. And they do, again, how do you get the advantage on someone that's outgunned you? Well, you wait to attack until they are least expecting it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ferengi lucks into its advantage over the Enterprise, but for a while it has a legitimate advantage over the Enterprise.
And I also think that they're sort of a rogue element in an episode that is very tightly controlled in a way, right? Because if you talk about stakes in this episode, I mean, without the Ferengi, there really aren't any. I mean, there's no danger. No. There's no sense of malice. There's no sense of anybody could get hurt or die. There's really nothing of import happening here.
There isn't even a loss of pride. Whether Picard or Riker wins, the other is gonna, you know, Picard, you see when Riker's getting, you know, that gets that first trick, like Picard's impressed, you know, almost in spite of himself, but he's very impressed and he's proud.
Well, and I think, you know, what just occurred to me really is that, you know, the episode, I think, would have been fine without the Ferengi stuff. I think if it had just been a straightforward, we're going to have this war game and then the episode is over and Data's going to, you know, do his stalemate thing at the end of the episode at the Stratagema game, I think it would have been a fine episode. But I think the Ferengi being in the episode elevates it and ratchets up the tension and the stakes because, you know, whether or not Picard or Riker are victorious over each other, that's interesting in as much as anything is interesting.
Yeah.
But the real test of their skill and their resolve to fix a situation is there an actual threat? And so I think it's more impressive and it underlines the point of the episode more that the tactics that Riker and Picard are at a disadvantage against, you know, a ship that, you know, could legitimately destroy the Hathaway very easily.
Yeah.
And they win. And I think that makes it a stronger episode at the end of the day.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give this one 6 Stratagemas.
I was going to give it 7 Stratagema moves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the last episode of the second season, Shades of Grey.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Why can't they just amputate it before it spreads and give him a robot leg?
I think because they didn't have any in his size in stock.
Okay. Second question.
Yes.
Why couldn't they put him in Corbomite like the psychic kid in that one episode I hated?
Okay, see, here's the thing. You can't talk about Shades of Grey as a real episode of Star Trek.
I know, because it's an episode where they need to make Riker sad, so they show him clips from season one. I mean, that's exactly what happened.
So I guess I should ask you, you played this very close to the vest, and good for you. But when you were watching Shades of Grey, and you first realized that it was, in fact, a clip show... How did you react?
Poorly. No, well, you have to understand that when they first... So they got into the clip show, he's in like that, you know, hello, where is everybody? For a second, I thought, I hoped that they were film new scenes that were in, you know, in his mind. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that that's where they were going with that, and they had... You know, maybe he shaved for the episode because it was supposed to, you know, or maybe he was going back. Then for a second, when he's having this conversation with Data, was the first clip that I, you know, the first significant clip that they put in there.
From Encounter at Farpoint.
Yes,
yeah.
From the very first episode. Because I didn't, you know, because that had been a while ago. I didn't 100% remember. I thought it looked familiar and I thought, are they doing the exact same dialogue? And then when I realized that there was... And then I realized, like, oh, they're not – for a second I hoped, like, oh, my God, that – because I thought it would be actually cool if they have him kind of trapped inside his own consciousness and going through these clips, you know, going through these memories. But, you know, he thinks it's 2 years later, but he's reliving the – you know what I mean? Like, one of – I thought they were going to do one of those for a bit. And that might have been an interesting one, but
– That wouldn't have saved them any money.
I was going to say, because that would have – probably been even more expensive because they'd have to recreate all of these sets, and exactly, it's not like they, you know, creating that swamp set was just one set, you know what I mean? Like, if they had, so I don't, yeah, that was kind of where I got with that. And I think it was funny because we had been talking and you'd said, like, well, Star Trek doesn't really do clip shows very much. And
I think I said Star Trek doesn't do clip shows.
Yeah, yeah. So and
I obviously did that because I did not want to reveal the fact that Shades of Grey exists. I wanted you to go into it blind.
Well, we had talked
because I feel like if you had known that this was coming, I think you would have tensed up, and I think it would not have been a good experience for you. I wanted you to ease into the fact that this was a clip show, like a man going into a warm bath.
That's not the word I thought you were going to say at the end.
Okay.
I just know we were talking the other day and you said something like, oh, this is probably not going to be a long episode, but I can't tell you why. And I'm like, oh God. And I think that's when I said, like, well, you told me, you know, I'm really not sure because you said Star Trek doesn't do clip shows. So I'm really curious, you know, what they do with that. And yeah, they didn't even This is a series that brought us The Menagerie, which was one of the more creative uses of clips I've ever seen. And
technically, The Menagerie isn't a clip show. No. Because no one had seen The Cage at that point. So
no, but at the same time,
it's certainly a clip show in hindsight, but...
I mean, it is taking one episode, cutting it up, putting the things into a different context, and kind of... making it a slightly different episode from that. Like I said, it was a very... They used these elements to tell a very different story. And I liked that a lot.
Well,
and
I guess...
they could have done that.
I guess the lesson here is... if you have an unused production quality episode of a television show that was never aired... you can make a really good clip show.
I guess that is a good lesson to learn.
The thing about Shades of Grey is that... it's entirely an exercise in controlling costs.
Yes, it's in two rooms. You know,
they got directed on high by the budget people at Paramount that they needed to come in way under budget on the last episode of the season, apparently because they blew the budget on Q Who. Which, you know, okay, that makes sense. There was elaborate sets. They had a new ship, a lot of special effects work. I think they did a new score for that episode. Whoopi Goldberg was in the episode. John DeLancey was in the episode.
I mean, as far as an episode goes, and as far as money well spent, he was money well spent, I will say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think if we have to put up with Shades of Grey to get Q-Who, okay. I don't necessarily know why they had to do this to save money, because, of course, in a normal episode of the season, it would have been budgeted at 26 episodes, and this one only has 22, so I'm not really sure how the budget was working out. But
I'm also thinking about stuff like Measure of a Man was probably not an expensive episode to make, because it was largely...
It was largely, yeah. It was
them on, you know, if...
That's a bottle show, really, as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, what?
Certainly.
A few guest stars, but other than that, not really. So Shades of Grey, I think, out of the gate, is this the best way that they could have saved money? I don't necessarily know. I don't know that I even think that it's worth talking about the actual episode.
I mean,
because...
we could talk a little bit about it. It's a terrible clip show as far as...
Well, it's... Let me...
None of the clips they show are really that standalone, or they don't really give a good... I don't think they give the best...
I don't think that Star Trek has individual scenes that work well out of context, number one.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. We're not talking about a sitcom where they can cut out 20 jokes and everybody laughs.
I was saying, I'm thinking of like Golden Girls clip shows. They just do like bits that they do. They have the framing story. It's usually in a, hey, remember when we went to that thing, and they show them in the wacky scene, and that's it. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there's no hook to hang any of these clips on. So they come up with this, frankly, asinine plot about Geordi and Riker on a planet, and Riker gets attacked by a vine, whatever. Okay.
I'm fine.
I mean, let's be clear here, though. I mean, this was obviously like a first or second draft. I mean, none of the dialogue is very good. It's very lazily plotted. There's scenes where it seems like the actors, especially Marina Sirtis, are way overacting to compensate for the fact that they are really trying to sell like very poor material, and it's so transparently just a clip show.
Oh no, it's
that there's no way that anybody I think could in good faith enjoy this episode.
If they had gone goofy with it, it might have even worked. Like I said, they. I don't know. I think it's – they're trying to do it seriously, and you can't do this seriously. If you're going to have – all right, well, Troy and Dr. Pulaski are trying to manipulate, you know, Riker's memories until they can figure out the set that's going to destroy this, you know, microbe. Like, you have to be a little silly. Again, the show doesn't do comedy well, but I don't know how well it does melodrama.
I'm not really sure. I mean, okay, once you decide that you need to do a clip show to save money, I'm not really sure how you do a better one than this, in the sense that, you know, there's really no way to, I mean, because, okay, your Golden Girls example again. The Golden Girls clip shows are the cast of the show sitting around and talking about things that have happened to them in the past.
Yeah.
Would that have even worked for this show? I mean, I don't think so.
I'm trying to think of things I'm coming up with shit like, you know, they find an alien race who's like, we need to judge your bravery. Let's scan your brains. And then you see if you see, like, it's terrible, but...
But the problem you come across with that then is, okay, but you need to come up with alien makeup,
race,
need to pay guest stars, you need to have a different set. Like, so it's not really going to save any money.
Oh my god, I'm Captain Picard and I've been captured by the energy beings that you can't see and that just look like me. Let's talk about Here Is Your Life.
Hey, we're not talking about the third season of the original series here. They had a budget, okay? They weren't making this on $49 and a pizza.
Listen, I think you need to give Data a birthday party, and everybody, as they're giving him presents, and it's reminding them of earlier moments with Data.
Yeah, I can't think of a way that they could have done this without coming across as extremely cheesy.
Everybody's going into Counselor Troy's office for a session and talking about, well, gee, I was reminded of this event. Like, I mean, come on.
Well, you know, okay, here's a way that this
episode actually might have been cool, because we don't see what a day it would have shown us a day in the life of.
I'm thinking about this. I just came across maybe an idea for how they could have fixed this episode, and it's too bad that it's not.
I was gonna say, how, even if it was 1989, how, you know, we would have been recording this on a little tape record in your bedroom, and no one would hear it.
Have it be the first anniversary of the death of Tasha Yar.
Oh.
And have everybody coming to Troy to talk about the fact that they're dealing with the fact that it's the first anniversary of Tasha Yar's death.
That's perfect.
You've got a few strong scenes in the episode of people, you know, maybe you've got, you know, 5-minute scenes, you know, and then you've got these clips of them interacting with Tasha Yar. There you've got an episode.
Exactly. You need one set, which is, you
know, I just solved Shades of Grey.
Maybe it was just because, you know, they only paid Marina Sirtis and, you know, Diana Muldaur for this episode. Like, they would have to have the rest actually get on set for that day. But I mean, if you knew that this was being recorded in advance, you just give everybody an extra hour.
Well, you cut Diana Mulder because she wasn't around for Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
Data's already in the episode. Marina Sirtis is in the episode. Geordi's in the episode. So cut Geordi, put Worf in, because Worf and she had a couple of good moments. You know, you've got Wesley, whatever, don't bother with Wesley. And there you go. You got 5 characters that are going to go into Counselor Troy's office, and they're going to talk about
Picard. You have Picard.
Picard. Talk about their grief. Talk about the fact that they miss her. And there you go. You got an episode.
Yeah. There.
Why didn't they do that? I don't know.
And I think what's kind of shitty about this is the fact that this is
maybe it could have been that they would have had to. No, actually, no. I guess it wouldn't have been that they would have had to have paid Denise Crosby again,
because they
used clips of her in this episode.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe she would have needed to get a little more money, but they still have some other guest stars.
But then you don't have to pay Diana Mulder, so there you go.
Yeah, and the guest stars whose clips you used, you don't have to pay them then, like those Klingons.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, it would have
probably
even
would have evened out, right?
But again, this is the season finale.
Yeah.
If the Borg, if Q, who had been the season finale, this would have ended on, again, and knowing that the Borg do become a thing, that would have been a very good season finale. It would have been a very good level setter for some of the rest of the series. It would have, you know, this as episode 16, like, all right, we had a shitty episode in the middle of the season.
I mean,
you know?
I get the sense that Q, who went, well, number one, Q Who was supposed to come much earlier in the second season, so I think it was already delayed.
Okay.
I also think that perhaps it seems to me that Q Who went way over budget, much more than they were intending, and so they didn't even know that they needed to save this much money until the very end of the season.
It could have been that they were writing this episode where we're going to write an episode where Riker's dying for this, and that's the A plot, and the B plot is, and the B plot was cut.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, what you're seeing here, and you know, maybe this is a good transition into, you know, sort of a summary of the second season and how it went. But I think that, you know, this episode was aired in the middle of July. You know, I mean, like, people don't watch TV in July as a general rule. The season started very late. I think it started in November or something like that. It only had 22 episodes, so it was a short season. There were a lot of behind the scenes production problems with this season in general. And so I think Shades of Grey is just, the second season is just limping along to a close as well as it can possibly do. And yeah, it's depressing and sort of disappointing that this is the season finale, but at this point, the show wasn't doing big season finales. Forget last season, the season finale was the Neutral Zone.
No, I know. But,
so,
you know, it's a case of, I mean, watching this in 2014 and knowing, like, okay, well, again, this is just season 2 and there's 5 more seasons that are, you know, about to be really good and we're about to get into the show being really, you know, that's fine. I can. And I said it was a miracle that this show made it to a second season. Having watched this, it's still better, but I'm still surprised it got a third season. You know, I'm willing to accept that by season three, this it found its voice. It became a legitimate hit. I think it's, I guess this shows that how different the world was. That
yeah, it,
they
I mean,
could give it another. Well, all right. You gave it two. You're finding it, you know. And of course, if season three had not worked out, there would not have been more than a season three. But, you know.
I think that's interesting because I think, you know, on the whole, the second season is significantly better than the first season. You know, we've got episodes that are working, you know, even episodes that I had sort of forgotten about, like Peak Performance, which we both liked, Loud as a Whisper, which I know you didn't like, but I liked. And then, of course, you've got things like Q-Who, The Measure of a Man. Yeah. You know, you've got episode like a Matter of Honor, A Natural Selection. I think these are episodes that work well.
Yeah.
So the show is
the
definitely...
Child, that was a great...
Yeah, let's not
I even... completely forgot about that until seeing the clip from that, and then I wished I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, that's just like one of those things that you just like, wish was not real.
You know, and they picked clips from such shitty episodes.
Well, I do want to get to the clips they picked, but I think it's interesting because, you know, if you look at this on the whole, like, the show was getting good ratings. You know, it was at an advantage because it was syndicated, so they weren't, you know, a network wasn't paying anybody to put this on, so it was making them money. So really, even though the show quality wise was having some very unevenness and the behind the scenes production stuff was frankly like appalling. I don't think any of the writers except for Melinda Snodgrass went into the third season. You know, Paramount was making money at the show. There was no reason for them to cancel it. And what you're looking at really is just a television landscape that was just profoundly different. I mean, people had what, 10 channels. I mean, cable was not, I mean, I didn't have cable when I was.
And one of them was just Walter Cronkite sleeping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you look at it, it's like your choices were very limited. And the show was just good enough that people were like, okay, well, I'll watch this.
Again, you're looking for something that there is going to be a group of people who will watch anything that has a spaceship in it. And sure. What else had a spaceship in it at this point?
I don't think anything.
So, you know, if you're the kind of person who enjoys sci-fi shows, this probably was the best of what was out there. And it was... I mean, as a whole, it's at least enjoyable. Haven't wanted to stab myself during most of this
season.
Yeah,
and that's what I want to ask you because, you know, as someone who's not as new to Star Trek as you were when we started this podcast, obviously, but still, you know, fairly new, would you have come back for the third season? Especially with the Shades of Grey being
why
the
do you make
finale.
Why do you make it seem like I would have stuck around even this long? Like,
yeah, that's
if I
true.
Had,
yeah,
I would be honest if I were number one. If I were watching this just on my own, I probably wouldn't even have bothered with the first couple seasons, or I would have.
Yeah.
There were a lot of episodes that I would have just totally skipped, and I don't necessarily like. If I was just watching this, I'm sure you would have said, you know, here, Measure of a Man, Q-Who, you know, here's, you know, maybe there would have been six episodes through these two seasons that you would have told me like these, you know, if you watch these, that's really all you need, you know, and then start with season three. I guess that's the feeling I get with this. If I'd been watching it at the time and didn't know where the show was to have been going. And that's another reason I'm surprised that it stayed, because I can see the show dropping audience members.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because, I mean, the ratings stayed fairly consistent. I mean, they went up and went down a little bit, but on the whole, they stayed fairly consistent over the first couple seasons.
But
so,
again, I have so many other shows I can watch. And
right,
you know,
right.
And I have all these fucking DVDs. I have, you know, a Netflix account. I have, you know. So, yeah, those wouldn't have been.
And I mean, to be clear as well, I mean, I don't want to say that people at the time, you know, contemporaneously were not having these thoughts as well. I mean,
no,
certainly I know of many people who were around and adult people when the show was being aired originally, and they stopped watching it because it they were like, this is unmitigated crap. I don't want to watch this. I mean, you have to remember that, you know, having a new Star Trek show, even in the second season, the show was still very much in the shadow of the original series and the original series cast. And this was not Star Trek to a lot of people.
And I can definitely see that. And you know, I can also see that being this is that moment when that band that you love comes out with the new album and you don't like it. You know, that's
yeah.
And you, I can see this being for so many people. Okay, Star Trek's done. It was wonderful that we had the original series. There were some really good, you know, there were some good movies that we got out of this. But, gee, I've got to move on to the next one.
And I think, you know, interestingly enough, and this is something that we'll talk about in a few years when we get to the Abrams movies, but I think that's a similar reaction to what you're seeing among Trekkies about a lot of, you know, a lot of Trekkies among about the Abrams movies, where they're just kind of like, okay, well, I don't like these. You know, there's a lot of Star Trek for me to enjoy. I enjoyed Star Trek for 50 years, and I can continue to enjoy the Star Trek that was made before these, and Star Trek is going in a direction that I don't appreciate. So this is the end of it for me. And of course, there are a lot of Trekkies that, that like the Abrams movies.
Yeah.
And so I think this is always something that happens. I think that, you
not
know,
just, and not just with Star Trek.
And not just with
Star
Trek, with everything.
Really,
I mean,
anyway.
People were, you know, Battlestar Galactica fans, you know, 10 years ago when the reboot happened, were freaking out about it and saying, how dare they? This is not Battlestar Galactica. And I mean, let's be clear, Battlestar Galactica, the original one, is pretty bad.
I think at this point, the second is, even though this, you know, the new one is, even though the ending, you know, has been, let's say, mixed reception, you know, when the new series is what Battlestar Galactica is to most people, I would say.
Yeah, in a similar way to The Next Generation is Star Trek to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think coming into Star Trek with the original series is uncommon at this point. I know people that don't like the original series, for example, that really like Star Trek. I think that that's a shame, because I think that there's a lot to the original series that we can really enjoy. And I mean, I know you enjoyed some of it. I mean, I don't think that you enjoyed all of it. But
at the end of the day, I mean, when I look it back at the original series, I liked whether this is true or not at the time, and I don't know, but I've come back with the impression that I liked a lot more than I didn't. And that I...
Yeah.
And that I didn't have a bad... And I don't regret watching the bad episodes.
Yeah, yeah. But I think...
Maybe Cat's Paw.
Oh God! Why did you have to remind me of that?
Listen, it's Robert Block has to come back every so often. Can't kill him.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, Shades of Grey is kind of the example of everything that was wrong with the show up to this point. And frankly, I don't think that anybody was really interested in trying to make this work as an episode of the show, because, you know, Maurice Hurley was out the door. A lot of them were out the door. They were just kind of like, let's get this done.
And no,
let's
that's
move
it.
On to, you know, let's move on to working on, you know, I don't know, Airwolf or something.
Listen,
like whatever
fans,
they were doing.
Just spend time with your families. It's July. Just go to the beach, you know, have a barbecue. Just this isn't, you don't need to do this anymore.
Yeah, don't watch it.
You know,
don't track
have
it
nice,
down.
Have a beer, sit out, and enjoy the sunset.
Don't set your VCR to record this,
you know,
week's episode.
You didn't need... Just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Everything's okay.
There's one thing that I liked about Shades of Grey, and I liked the scene where Troy and Riker are talking at the very beginning. I think it's not extremely well written. I think it treads ground that we've covered before.
Yeah, but... So when she's like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, you have to be an example.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I liked that. And I think if we had had more of that in this episode, I think it would have been good. But of course, then it wouldn't have been a clip show.
Yeah. Well, I think that I see an episode of this that's really well written. That's mostly just the different characters talking to Riker or dealing with Riker like themselves. Just a very... Riker comatose for half of it, and just a very personal character episode where these people have to deal with the fact that someone that they love is about to die. I mean, that could have been a very powerful episode, and that would have been a cheap one too, because that probably could have just been done completely within sickbay and then, you know, someone's office.
Yeah, yeah. But I think at the end of the day, this is not a promising episode for the third season. I don't necessarily know to what degree we're supposed to read into the third season from this episode. But, you know, looking at it as someone who knows the show, I know the show does not get this bad ever again.
Oh, good.
And, you know, I just want to say, don't get disheartened, Richard.
Okay.
we've made it over the hump, and there's a lot of good Star Trek coming.
I know, but you've been telling me that for like so long.
But we finally gotten here.
I won't believe it until I have that episode with the fucking flute. Because I'm beginning to think I may have dreamt that one. When I see the fucking flute episode,
wow, that's very meta.
I'll be like, I'll be like, all right, this show is actually good. But right now, all I've seen was goddamn Dixon Hill and like Ferengi and like that oil slick that killed Tasha Yar and like Data's doing, you know, there was Joe Piscopo at some point, Eric. There was Joe Piscopo. Joe Piscopo do a Jerry Lewis impression.
Joe Piscopo never appears in any episode of Star Trek ever again.
Never appears in anything ever again if I have anything to do with it. He doesn't have a career anymore. Is he dead? Oh, my God. That's so disrespectful.
I don't think he's dead, but I don't know.
How would we?
Just be of good cheer, Richard. Next week we'll be fine, and we'll be on the upswing again.
Oh, God.
It'll be like the original series all over again. Things will get good. They're going to have new uniforms.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Oh, good.
And look forward to that.
Oh, yeah. So Wesley's butt will not be as suggestively prominent.
I think he wears the same outfit, actually. But everybody I'm really...
Because
outfits.
He has a horrible butt. I mean, he just does not...
I don't want to talk about his butt. He was like 15.
I'm sorry. He's, you know... He's not 15 anymore.
That is true. He's not. But the butt that you were talking about is 15. And I think we should move on and stop talking about Wesley's crusher's butt. Because I don't want to talk about it anymore.
All right. Well, I thought you were Geordi of the Forge, so I'm sorry.
I don't even think that this is an episode that you can rate.
This gets two shades of gray.
I don't consider this to be a real episode of Star Trek, frankly. So let's just wrap this up, put a bow on the first two seasons of The Next Generation, and go boldly into the third season next week when we talk about Evolution and the Ensigns of Command.
Okay, I'm ready for Evolution.
Join us then.